It is Saturday, February 18th, 2006, 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California. Today's rundown, a bit of geek news, and people making really cool things. With Bob Parks, author of Makers, all kinds of people making amazing things in their backyards, basements, or garages. During the second half of the show, your questions and comments.
GeekSpeak is a production of KUSP, Central Coast Public Radio, kusp.org. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI. GNIHosting.com.
It's time now for Geek Speak. We're through being cool. We're through being cool. Eliminate the ninnies and the twits. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KOSB. Today on our program, we'll focus on geek news and all kinds of people making amazing things in their backyard, basement, or garages. With author Bob Parks, his new book, Makers. But this show is not just about us or our guests, it's about you. About your technology, pain, and pleasure. That's why during the second half of the show, I'll welcome you to join our conversation. The phone number's 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877, or contact us now. Go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. I'll give out that contact information again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. This is Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks, Sean Cleveland, Technical Marketing Manager at NVIDIA, and Drew Meyer, Product Manager at Network Appliance. Drew, you did a wonderful job last week of hosting the show. I really appreciate it. I'm looking forward to getting you back on the lead again.
Thanks, Lyle. It's kind of you.
Before we get into our discussion about Makers, this wonderful book with Bob Parks, the author, we're going to do some geek news as we do every week. And I think I'll start with Drew because you seem to be on top of the game as you were last week.
Well, let's see. We've got a new group that's a startup that's just announced they're going to race against another company for the objective of putting a new passenger spaceship so that you can pay money and get a space flight. They're teamed up.
Finally.
Yeah, finally. Just what we all needed, right? There was a company that put three millionaires into orbit, and they've teamed up with Russia's Federal Space Agency and the financial backers of the Ansari X Prize, a $10 million prize, to develop a new breed of suborbital passenger spaceship. The company's called Space Adventures. They're based in Virginia, and they're claiming they're going to be the first to fly.
And how much is it going to cost?
I'm not sure about that. It looks like there's going to be competition, and some industry pundits are heralding this as a new space race, if you will, between private industries rather than governments.
Wonderful. Well, I look forward to the... I'm sure that the person that we would know that would do it would be Chris Stumpfy, because he seems to always do the crazy thing. He's got the pilot license. He's got the...
He was the one who told us that great story about the Russian spacesuit, SpaceSat, floating around up there broadcasting.
Cool. Thanks for that news story. Sean, I'm going to step over to you. Hi.
Good morning. We've talked a little bit about the neutrino telescope at the South Pole. Well, it looks like researchers at Northeastern University and the University of California, Irvine, have been using what's known as AMANDA. It's a neutrino detector, kind of the smaller brother to the new IceCube, which is the large new neutrino telescope.
So there's a second neutrino telescope?
This is just a detector. Mm. So what they're finding with this detector are ghost-like particles from space that could possibly serve as probes to a world beyond our familiar three dimensions. So they might be finding first signs of the extra dimensions that, you know, scientists have been talking about regarding string theory.
Now, why would they be finding that with a neutrino telescope?
So
let's have them on and find out.
It's way beyond me, but But basically, these ghost-like particles are two scientists are describing things that we've never seen before. And these possibly could be extra dimensions. What they're all trying to strive right now is one theory, a unified theory that can explain the quantum description of four forces, and those four forces being electromagnetism, strong forces, binding atomic nuclei, and weak forces seen in radioactivity. And the fourth is gravity. But in the way that they're looking at gravity, it kind of it goes against it's not compatible with Einstein's general relativity.
Sure. The whole breakdown between quantum mechanics and Einstein.
And there's just not a lot of proof, you know, except for pure mathematics.
So very cool. So this instrument they're going to use for that purpose.
Yeah. So the whole idea is string theory. Lyle, you've done some research on this. Is that? Well, why don't you describe it? You're really good at it.
No, I think we should go on to the next news story.
Okay. This is what
I
can definitely go into.
But you know what? Wow. What's interesting is we're going to have one of the people who helped build that neutrino telescope.
The Ice Cube one, the one in Antarctica.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Keith Beattie, who lives in Berkeley, so he can come out here and be on the show, and maybe he could talk about this.
He could definitely talk about that aspect of it.
Interesting stuff.
In general, string theory, it's a great theory. It's kind of a supposed to kind of encompass quantum and general theory of relativity. And the idea is that you have small fragments of energy called strings that vibrate, and their vibration causes what we know as particles. That's the general, but that's pretty weak.
And there are multiple dimensions. And
oh, sure. They're vibrating in multiple dimensions. Okay, let's go on to the next news story.
Wow.
Drew,
well, this is a little more down to earth, you could say, and back in our own backyard. The Wall Street Journal just ran a report saying that science fairs have reached a new level of intensity because high school students are using these as a way to pad their resumes or actually to turn trendy topics that are cutting edge in the newspaper into, topics for their resumes, for their essays as they get into school. For example, this gal is in Harvard now, and she, on her application essay, she did a description of her fetal stem cell research on the characteristics of Down syndrome, which is
a high school student.
A high school student.
Of
and
course.
She, this was her science project for her science fair, which is a little more out there than you normally get.
That's a geek.
Well, she says if you say you study something like a random molecule, it's kind of obscure, but when you use a marketing buzzword like stem cells, then people really perk up. Mm-hmm. So it's a little marketing spin on the old science fair. But the part that really brings it home is that there was a 2002 project involving marijuana muffins for pain management right here in Santa Cruz.
From a high school student.
Happily, we're in the Wall Street Journal.
Wow, that's sick. Because yeah. Good.
Apparently so.
Hey, all news is good news, right?
Apparently that got a lot of attention, but it was only an average experiment at best.
Yeah, what a shame. It would be nice if it was, you know, high-profile science.
A little too much marketing and not enough science.
Drew, I know you got a whole bunch of stories, so I'm going to go to you again. And Sean, you've got something you want to...
All right, well, the other cool thing that I ran across was that in 2013, the copyright of the sound recording of the Beatles' first album will expire. It's not very far away. And at the same time, recordings from Elvis Presley and Cliff Richard and other performers from that same period, the copyright's going to expire, which means that the music is available to the public domain. Anybody can take it, do anything.
They need to get the Disney lawyers
back in line, exactly. So the discussion is about extending from the 50-year period to a 95-year period. The entertainment industry is all a flutter about what's going to happen. The quality of the music's going to go down,
man.
And all our royalty streams are going to disappear, and on and on. So it's kind of an upcoming panic. It'll be interesting to see what happens, whether the Senate approves a bill that extends copyright law like they did with Disney.
Got to keep the great grandkids in money.
Got to keep Mickey
like
and the Beatles safe.
Isn't it all owned by
pretty much
by
no.
Michael
Actually,
Jackson anyway?
Yeah, Michael Jackson still owned a bunch of that music.
Yeah, I say the culture we grew up with should be free at some point in our lives. That's how I feel about it. All right, you listen to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. With me in the air rooms are Sean and Drew, and we just talked about geek news now. For more than 10 years, journalist and author Bob Parks has covered the quirky, fascinating personalities behind the latest technologies. His feature article on innovation and business, his articles on innovation have been in business, sports, health, and outdoors, appeared in such magazines as Make, Wired, Outside, and Business 2.0. His latest endeavor, chronicling the works of people who make. The people that spend time in their garage and such, making amazing things. His new book, Makers, All Kinds of People Making Amazing Things in Their Garages, Basements, and Backyards. Bob, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi, thanks a lot, Lyle.
Thank you so much for being here. When I grabbed this book, I actually saw this book. Normally I get O'Reilly books really quick. This book I saw because someone went to Macworld and had to buy it and brought it back in and showed it to me. I'm like, that book's amazing. Hardbound booked about 100 people doing really crazy things. I guess you only got like 90 people.
But some of these things, I should just read through the list of them. But I'm just going to ask you, what was your favorite person to talk to regarding this? I know that's an impossible thing to do, but try.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, there's a guy named Skunk in the Boston area, and sure enough... Well,
that's the bike guy, right?
What's that?
The bicycle guy,
the
right?
The bicycle welder. By day, he's expert at welding exotic materials, you know, like titanium and aluminum and all of these fancy alloys. And by night, he kind of kicks back by creating these fantastic bikes that are maybe 20 feet high, and some of them are 150 pounds, and one of them he's rigged with a radio transmitter, so he can play kind of a podcast as he's going down the street. It'll seize one of the frequencies on people's radio dial, and they can dial into his radio station while
portable,
he's driving down.
Portable radio station going
along. Yeah, yeah.
So he can ride with a whole bunch of other people that have added music players to their bikes and have a local traveling radio station. I love that. So when you say exotic materials, that's his day job is doing this kind of pretty hard work?
Well, it's just that I was just impressed that there are a lot of people out there with just extremely specific skills, and then they bring them to their hobbies, and they make these amazing things. And for him, it's making these $3,000 bicycles, for the high-end market. And he just knows his way around a welder that he can whip up a few bikes around his club at night.
Can you tell us about it's the private jet, Hans Kron?
Oh yeah, that guy was a blast. He just and you get a little insight into people's lifestyles. Every 2 years he moves to another place around the world. He's a manager for a bank. So, he's been in really wonderful, exotic vacation spots like Kazakhstan and the middle of Mexico, nowhere near anything exciting. And now he's in Belgrade and in Serbia. And, I think the way he kind of deals is he's got this terrific flight sim that he's worked on for 10 years. He's slaved away at this thing, so he's got a whole room full of equipment, six high-powered PCs running this thing. And
did he write the software for the flight sim?
He has to write the software itself is a package for flight sim users, but you have to write all of the you have to write all the code to talk to all the instruments.
And the thing he's made is a sit down flight simulator that it looks like you're inside a jet when you sit in it, and he made the whole thing.
Yeah,
out of regular off the shelf parts.
Yeah.
Spare parts, spare time, and spare parts. Wow.
So let me ask these people that are just doing these crazy things. Let me go through a list. Okay, so artist installation work, tables that walk around by themselves.
What?
Machines that draw art on the walls.
So how sophisticated books, are these tables that walk? Do they
lock picks,
run into things?
Yeah, they're not. They don't have much brains. They're literally like a. It's called a foal, so they're literally like a newborn horse. It just kind of walks around and bumps into things. But it's beautiful.
Wow. So that's like a first generation. Who knows where this is going to go?
It's more like an art installation piece.
It is.
A lot of this is artists that are really doing the. Sean, every once in a while you'll ask in the beginning of the show when I introduce the geeks what I do, and I support artists that do this kind of work. Like Beth Sheba is one of our guests. In the program that I manage, she came and lectured about her work. Tell me about Beth Sheba Gibson. Let's see, was it Grossman's work?
Grossman, yeah. Oh, she does terrific art with rapid prototyping. A lot of people are starting to use these giant machines that will turn a digital file into a 3D object, for prototyping industrial work. But she's taken it to a whole new level, made it her art. And so she creates these fantastic mathematical forms on her computer screen, and then has them printed out with a printer into bronze. And it comes out as a little sphere about 3 inches wide out of heavy bronze.
And the thing is, it's not a traditional casting. It's actually a layered casting, like a printing. And she can do shapes inside the object that you can't actually cast because you could never get the casting material to hold its structure like that. Or to be able to pull the material out. Really fascinating stuff. And her work is, she also does models of scientific research as well. But one of those things where she's taking the cutting edge of technology and applying it directly to her art form, which is cool. Here's one. There's one in here that when I saw it, I went, oh, yeah, I knew I should have made that years ago. I had a cat that would always go out on the back deck, but we also had squirrels, or actually raccoons, that could come in. And somebody had Bob Blick had the exact same problem. So what do you do with this problem of animals coming in through the cat door?
He trained his cat to create a special action at the door that a microcontroller would recognize. So the cat walks up to the door, yanks on a little patch of woolly fabric on the door, and yanks on it in such a way that just once, so that the microcontroller then unlatches the door and opens it right up for the cat, and then shuts it right behind the cat.
Nice.
Took him 10 days to teach that cat how to do it.
10 days. That's dedication. And it's battery operated, so it works when the power goes out, but one of the most amazing things in this write-up is that he used it in a practical sense. I mean, above and beyond letting his cat in and out.
Yeah, the cat got sick one day, and they couldn't figure out if it had gone out and eaten some poison or how long it had been in the house. Did it get in a fight with something, some animal? So he was able just to look at his Linux server, which creates a daily log of all the cat's actions near the door. And find out that the cat hadn't been out for a few days, so it had been something that he ate inside the house.
Wonderful. So why did he have a log of the entrance and exits? Because he had a microcontroller, and if you've got a microcontroller cat door, you have to make a log. I mean, that's.
I don't know if this guy will resonate with you guys, but do you feel like a lot of people are just generating data because they think it's cool? Like, there's a guy in England that has a webcam pointed at the highway near his house. And he just counts all the cars. I mean, maybe you could track that against the temperature or the economy.
So he just happens to have a camera that's or have a house next to or his living abode next to a road and decided I'm going to count all those cars and wrote the software and everything to do that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think a lot of people, just like this Bob Blick guy, you know, he just wants to know how many times the cat goes in and out. And if you create a lot of data and look at it, we have the ability on our personal computers to see these graphs that maybe you'll learn something about animals. I mean, it's exciting to be a non-professional and be able to access this stuff.
Yeah. I kind of wonder about the cat's privacy, right? I mean, what about the cat's rights to do what it wants to when it wants to and not be monitored by its owner?
Well, to some degree, I mean, if the owner had to let it in and out, the cat would have less privacy, right?
If the cat wants to go out and bring somebody home on the sly, there's no chance. And there's a log of his activities. It's like the government monitoring his browsing activity.
It's like a George Orwell type thing for cats.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Maybe I drove by that guy's house, too, and now my car's in his log.
I know a few people in the Santa Cruz Mountains that spend some time actually living in the woods, and sometimes their permanent residence is camping out. And I know that's kind of an unusual thing, but there's some people that take it to the extreme. Can you tell us about Tom?
Tom.
Outside the box, the big wood sphere. I know you have
one. Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah, he's a work at home kind of guy, and I don't think he'd be settled for the traditional treehouse. He wanted to build a treehouse in among the redwoods where he lives, and he's an old boat builder by trade. So he created a perfectly round sphere, 13 feet in diameter, and he can go in there. It's got beautiful round windows that he had custom made, and he made it all himself, all the wood himself in a big garage. And he goes in there, he does his work, he'll bring his family in there to watch DVDs, but it just hangs there from the tree.
It's like 500 pounds. You have to lift
and it's
up there.
Round and it's made of wood?
Yeah, just like an old canoe. It's highly polished, you know, with the urethane.
Did you, Bob, we're speaking with Bob Parks. He's the author of Makers, All Kinds of People Making Amazing Things in Garages, Basements, and Backyards. And basically, I think this kind of came out of the whole Make magazine, that there's a lot of cool people that need full write-ups, but they're not actually teaching people. They're just, it's more like a profile of people that make stuff and what they're doing. And so you kind of got in the flavor of doing this book of 100 people doing this, and you almost got to 100. Did you travel to each of these people's places and see what they were doing?
Oh, I wish. I probably met a half a dozen of them, but typically what I would do is try to wrangle a phone call with them for a couple of hours and just keep peppering them with questions and prodding into their private lives. And I just got to really like the personality behind the maker personality. I kind of became a connoisseur of these people.
What is the maker personality?
I think it's people who are. It's important for them to be self-directed. Maybe they would be doing their cutting-edge research in some R&D lab or a university lab somewhere, but they'd rather be doing it on their own, and that's the kind of the personality that they have. And part of that goes along with a lot of these folks didn't have an easy time in high school or college.
How do you mean easy time?
When you talk to them, one guy who made a radio wave gun that will...
I was going to ask you about that.
it'll turn a computer off at 50 paces just by firing the gun at it. He said that, the classroom, you don't get to touch stuff or make stuff in the classroom. You don't get your hands dirty. It's all very theoretical. And he said, you can't even ask questions or challenge the teacher in any way, and he said that it wasn't his learning style, and I kind of heard that echoed with a lot of people if he had some curiosity about something, maybe a gun that would shut down electronic systems, why, heck, he should just make one.
And so he did.
Wow.
Does this radio weapon thing, I'm assuming he doesn't aim it at people with pacemakers?
No, I think he just He shot it off a few times in his house, and had to explain to his dad why the computer wouldn't reboot.
So, oh, wait, how old is this guy?
He's 21.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But he's been going through a couple of iterations, right?
Yeah, he's made a few of them. They're called HERF guns, high-energy radio frequency.
We're speaking with Bob Parks, the author of Makers by O'Reilly, hardbound book, beautiful tabletop kind of book, flipping through and seeing people that do amazing things, making amazing things. We're going to invite your questions and comments on technology in general in just a minute, so get your pencils ready. Bob, did you go in anybody's place and see their environments? Of meeting the 12 people or so?
Well, there's pictures in the book too, right?
Well, photographers were sent around, I'm assuming.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely. That's part of it, just to see the workbenches.
And so I want to get a feel for their environments. I mean, it does have some pictures in the books, but in general, did you see them really organized in their environment, or is it very chaotic? What is it like?
I think it's their own type of organization. A lot of these people, whether they're female or male, spouses aren't allowed in there. And it's just because they have their own level of organization. And, also, I think... a lot of the makers cherish this kind of sense of edgy science that they decry the loss of danger. And you guys were talking earlier about the science projects. These people said that in high school they weren't able to do the science projects they wanted. They maybe involved nuclear energy or fire, and so their workrooms are often these dangerous places. With a welding tank in one corner and a jet engine in the other corner, and it's their playpen. It's the place where they go to get away from the world.
GeekSpeak is proudly sponsored by Business Pleasure, a full-service business center in Felton, offering color printing, design, computer rentals, delivered office supplies, shipping via FedEx, UPS, DHL, and more. Details at businesswithpleasure.com. You're listening to GeekSpeak. Our guest today is Bob Parks, author of Makers, amazing people doing amazing things. I'm not going to go to the full subtitle. It's too long. But you're welcome to call in now and ask questions of Bob, or just ask questions of the geeks in general. We'll take anything. Our phone numbers are 476-2800, toll free at 1-800-655-5877, and Rick Fillman awaits your call. Of course, you can also go to the internet, go to geekspeak.org, and click on Contact Us to get in our email. This program is supported by a grant from Cruise.io, providing local and nationwide internet services, including DSL 6.0, spam filters, and virus protection. Information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are Sean Cleveland and Drew Meyer. And we're waiting for your calls with questions and comments of technology. If you'd like to talk about Makers or something you're making, please feel free. Or if you'd like to ask us questions about
I don't know, your computer problems? You know, we're here for that, too. Phone number is 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877, or go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. All right, Bob, while we wait for people to call in, I'd like you to tell us a little bit about the one of the best alarm clocks I've ever seen, at least for a carnivore. Please.
Yes, the Wake and Bacon. It's an alarm clock that you set 20 minutes before you really want to wake up, so that when it goes off, two high-powered halogen lights heat up a slice of bacon that's been frozen the night before and has been placed inside the alarm clock. When you wake up, the fragrant smell of fresh bacon wakes you up. The crackling of the bacon actually wakes you up, so you can pull out a little drawer and enjoy a piece of bacon and wake up in a whole new non-threatening, no alarm way.
So it doesn't make any noise, actually,
other than the sizzle of the delicious bacon.
And he really thinks that the product is best used with bacon, because, you know, you don't want to forget a piece of old pork bacon in there.
Okay,
yeah.
I was
gonna
add,
the power goes out, you end up with stale, cold, raw bacon next to your head,
and then your cat uses your
drags it
in the room.
Across your face.
You know, as a former vegetarian, I can see that this could be kind of offensive. So I'm glad that he uses fake and bacon. I'm assuming it would also work.
Can you do eggs? He just likes the smell of bacon. Is that the deal?
I think the halogen lights are probably, you know, with the fat content of bacon, probably the best solution.
Yeah. I just love the idea of being woken up very subtly. I remember as a kid, I had a lot of trouble waking up in high school, and I was kind of a maker as well. And I would like set up my TV to turn on at full blast and stuff before the TVs had self-timers. But mine was always overcompensate for my desire to stay in bed by doing something extreme, you know, like pushing the bed or shocking
and
me.
You had to get out of bed to stop it.
Yeah, you had to
stop
get out of bed
pain.
To stop the pain. Yeah, I love the idea of just going, oh, you know, bacon could wake you up. And it's true. Waking up like that feels great. I mean, I normally like it when I'm waking up to it. I think the best way to wake up is hearing that the house is already awake and people are eating pancakes, maybe a guest's over.
So really you have like kids now. That's like that. The best alarm clock.
Yeah. Yeah, a 1-year-old's foot in the neck is the best way to wake up in the morning. Oh, I'm loved.
Hey, Bob, tell us about somebody who was really close but didn't make it. How'd you make the cutoff between who's in the book? You could say who made it and who didn't make it.
Well, I wanted to include software, and there's one guy that you might have heard about him. He created a little boot disk. I forget the name of the technology, but it's a type of Linux that you can... you can put it in a machine anywhere, and it'll if you can reboot the machine, it'll kind of take over the machine and let the guy play Go. So he had used it in Staples and different cafes and things where you know, the computers were really kind of proprietary, but he wanted to play, you know, Go. I don't know, it's hard to show software in a book like this.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
It's like pages and pages of printed software code. The software, I'm blanking on this. We don't have our geek. Actually, Miles is sitting in the other room, and he could tell us all about what this is. But it's basically you can install Linux software that it actually runs. You don't actually install it on your hard drive, and you can put it on a CD or other portable media and get your machine to boot from it. It's a very cool way to try out an operating system without actually affecting your hard drive. All right, we are going to... So Rick Philman, who's answering our phones, and if you'd like to talk to Rick briefly before getting on air, you're welcome to do so. The phone number is 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. And his question was, have any patents come out of these contraptions?
There are a lot of patents pending. A lot of these people are serious about getting these things out in the public, and have put patents on them. The bar that serves over 100 cocktails using a touchscreen, they've got a patent pending on that. And I think the guy that does the the chestnut harvester. It's actually a lawnmower that the guy hacked apart, an industrial lawnmower that he hacked apart, that actually a giant vacuum to suck up chestnuts. And so this chestnut sucker has an international patent on it.
So
what? A chestnut sucker?
Is it like something you carry around, kind of like a backwards blower?
No, it looks like a ride-on lawnmower, but instead of blades, it's just It's just they're sucking up all those nuts.
Like the tennis ball thing or a golf ball thing.
Yeah, exactly. But
I guess so. Chestnuts fall, huh?
This has hydraulics to go up and down, so you know you can it can get them in little holes and stuff.
You know, one thing that happened from this book that, as a geek, I sometimes watch the Mythbusters because it's just a wonderful television show. And one of the things the Mythbusters did is try to prove that this old thing about burning a ship out in a bay didn't actually happen because it's too hard to actually focus light like that with mass people. And it's actually
Reflecting Archimedes taking mirrors and lighting the Romans
right.
on fire.
There's a whole argument whether that happened Phoenicians. Or not happened because you'd have to do a lot of aiming with your shields to shine enough light to burn the ship. So the Mythbusters try to do this. And one thing they try to do is make a small... Remember this episode? They try to make a small parabolic mirror that could burn something. And they didn't have a very good time of it. It was really difficult to make. But luckily... luckily...
The book will tell you
Luis,
how to do it.
Luis did it. So can you tell us about that thing?
Yeah, the advantage that guy had... probably advantage over all of us is that he's a rocket scientist, literally. He's got a PhD in rocket science from University of Washington, and part of his curricula is using software called MATLAB, which can do really specific engineering tasks. And what he realized is that if you try to just glue the mirrors onto a giant piece of board and focus them on a central point, you're going to lose. You're not going to be able to focus them perfectly. So he had this thing do a simulation of a solar death ray in software, and then it was easier for him to cut up wooden blocks with a saw that represented the exact angle that the software told him to use.
And so basically what he has is a board that kind of pivots that has a whole bunch of mirrors on it. It's about 6 feet tall, I should say 2 meters tall, and it focuses its light into a central location, which, of course, then you can put your cell phone, if you want to destroy a cell phone, or popcorn, if you want to make popcorn. And it just fries it. Just
super heat. So it does work.
Oh, it works?
The focus is a few feet away from the surface of the mirrors, and you put something in that focus, and bang, it bursts into flame.
It's gone.
I think the Mythbusters might have tried to do it a little bit further out, a couple feet out. Mm. And this guy said, the other lucky thing he had was he chose a modest goal of 2 feet out. So he's not really burning a ship, a mile away.
Yeah.
He can take an old Michael Jackson tape and turn it into flames in a few seconds, but... It's because of the proximity.
All right, we are taking your questions and comments about technology. We'll answer anything. You got a hard drive that might be making too much noise, and you're like, is this going to die soon? Yeah, it is. But you're welcome to call us up and ask us a question. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 655-5877. Now, I want to also say that O'Reilly sent us an extra book of this wonderful book, Makers, by Bob Parks. We got a copy. We're sitting here. It's still in good condition, even though we've opened it a few times. And I'd like to give it away to a high school or younger student out there who's listening to GeekSpeak. So give us a call, the first person, 476-2800, or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877 to call in that's under high school age, I should say, or in high school or lower, gets a copy of the book. So just give Rick your address. Again, the phone number is 476-2800, or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Phone's ringing but went away, so you might be able to do it. Or, of course, you can give us a call, and Rick will pipe us in after he's handled trying to get an address from somebody. Okay, let's move on to another thing.
We should also invite listeners to call in if they've made anything they think is interesting they want to share.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. I guess I could do one, but that's not so much fun.
Oh, come on. So talk about at least something that's happening up at UCSC.
Yeah, what are you supporting these days?
Well, these are definitely art projects. There's nothing physical that I'm doing a lot of work on.
So you really don't do anything, is that what you're saying? Come on.
So far, I've been doing a lot of checking out of equipment to do documentation on things. Mm. And on the hardware side, so we had a student that did a project that my son loved. It was really bad. His name is, I can't remember his name. Is it horrible? I'll get his name in a second. But the artist, a student up at UCSC, did one of his works. He made a television screen that you walked up to, and on the television screen you saw a picture of him and a video, and it's sitting in a chair, and below it was a button, and you could push the button on the kind of in the shot of the camera that you could see the top of a gun, and the gun was aimed at him. So if you that's all you could see, and that's all it was interfaced. On the other side of a black sheet was a gun with a robotic triggering device connected to that button and him. And this gun, of course, was one of those airsoft guns, so it's like a BB gun, but it hurts.
It's like he was wearing a plastic pellet.
And he was wearing a mask. And the basic idea was, you know, being removed from the violence you create. That was kind of his statement. I won't go directly into his statement, but you push the button and it fired the gun and he got shot in the chest. And of course, my four-year-old loved this because...
He pushed the button over and over and over.
He did and laughed hysterically. But I thought, I mean, and I took a picture of that, you know, a child enjoying the pain of somebody through a video camera, you know, just very messed up. And I hope that my wife doesn't leave me because I did that. So so that's an example of some projects that are happening up at UCSC. They're kind of in this realm. Let's talk a little bit about your book. And Rick is getting hit. I'm sure by this time we have given this book away. So this loaned book that I have on my on the table here, one that really hit me as not necessarily very practical, but probably very beautiful in a lot of ways, is the fiber optic desk.
Oh yeah, to give people in offices a chance to feel like they're a little bit outside, in the fresh air. The sun hits a panel of fiber optics, which carries all the light underneath the table and represents it across the table in the same way. So if a bird flies by, you see the shadow of that bird flying across the table.
Did you see this one?
That's pretty cool.
I didn't actually see it, but I talked to a lot of people. It said it was pretty effective. I mean, it's not like you see the actual, it's not like an LCD screen where you see the bird, but you do see these shadows and this play of light and, you know, the kind of dappling effect that's really nice.
And it definitely connects you from the outside world, right? I mean, that's...
Yeah, that's what these folks are looking for. The maker of the table, you know, is just another example of how what makers are like, that they're kind of compulsive or obsessive and serial makers. And this guy made amazing things. Another thing is a digital paint roller that will create a picture that you send it via software. So it has a cord on it, and it looks like a paint roller that you'd use to paint. But as you move it across a wall, it selectively puts the paint on the wall, so you end up with a photo.
Cool!
Wow!
It's really trippy.
All right. The asking for questions and mentioning hard drives definitely led Alex from Santa Cruz to call in. Alex, welcome to Geek Speak.
Yeah, hi, how you doing?
Quite well. What's your question?
Hey, I bought a computer that had a 30-gig drive, and then I bought an additional drive, and now my main drive, my C drive, is full, totally full, and I'm trying to get the 150 to be the main drive, and then I bought another 300 that I would like to use.
And what's the problem you're running into?
That I'm out of memory on the C drive, and I'm not sure how to turn the other drive.
The new drive?
Into a C, or I'm not sure what to do.
Okay, so do you have both the drives plugged in right now? So the new drive's plugged in, but it's not the C drive, it's not the main drive?
I have a 30 and a 150, and then I have a 300 waiting to be put in.
Okay, so you want to make the 300 your C drive, or move the 150 to the... Okay. It's kind of difficult, but if you have enough space on the 150 gig drive, copy the contents of the C drive onto the 150, then install the 300 gig drive as your primary drive and reinstall their operating system, and then reinstall the applications, and when you run into problems, hope that you can get copies from the second drive back onto the primary drive. Sean, do you want to go into that a little bit better?
Some drive manufacturers include tools that allow you to migrate the data, your operating system, from the original drive to the new drive.
Did you buy this drive at the store and it comes in a shrink wrap box? It's brand new.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And is it a brand name that we might recognize, like Maxtor or Seagate?
It's a Seagate.
It's likely that there'll be some tools available with that.
So there's a CD that came with it. Definitely read their instructions, because it's not uncommon for people to do this.
Alrighty.
And it might be that what you want to do, if there's a migration path, is pull the 150 gig drive out, put the 300 gig drive in the primary location, and, well, you'll have to follow their instructions.
They'll have instructions. They'll take pretty good care of you. It's not a
All
big
right.
deal. You'll be successful.
Alex, thanks so much for the call.
Thanks. Bye.
From Big Sur, Dick, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
I'm a complete computer illiterate, and I want to buy a laptop. I live in Big Sur, so we just have dial-up, and I need it for emailing, internet, and I'm a musician. I'm interested at some time in the future being able to record and edit live recordings made in my home. Also, something where I could, I don't know if I can get podcasts. I like Democracy Now, but we can't always listen to the time that it's on, so...
So you want to do some podcast listening?
Yeah.
You want to do some email and such. The podcast listening through a dial-up is going to hurt. But yeah. But you can, of course, maybe sometimes travel outside of Big Sur and get like a cafe and maybe download them all there and then go back into Big Sur. All right, so you just want to get a laptop and you want to know what kind, huh?
Yeah, my friends, my musician friends say Apple is the only thing, and my other friends say that they're all just about the same. Best to get one where you have somebody who can help you with it, whatever kind they have. But
what great advice you've been getting. I agree wholeheartedly. So do you have somebody that's a neighbor that...
I have both.
You have both.
Mm-hmm. But they're, the strongest opinions of people have Apple, say for musicians, they're because they come with all the... they make their own products for the add-ons, and
yeah.
And you might have a problem with a PC.
But you're not doing music work, right?
I may be, you know, like...
Okay, well, I think the advice you've gotten so far has been really great. I mean, basically, find some people that want to support you and help you out on this computer experience and get the same kind of computer they're getting. That's the Windows Mac choice, and that's a good choice for a new beginning person. And then, if you want to listen to podcasting, make sure you get iTunes by Apple, but it's available on Windows and on Macintosh. And I think that's all I got for you. If you're going to buy a laptop... you can get pretty inexpensive ones through the major online dealers like Dell and Gateway. And then, of course, for Apple, you want to go and try to find someone that is in education somehow and can help you with it, getting a cheaper priced unit. And, of course, you can go eBay if you want to be really risky. Good luck, and that's all I got for you.
Okay, thanks for your help.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Dell Outlet is really
hello.
Good.
Okay, from Santa Cruz, Dale, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hang on just a second. You were saying, Bob, you were saying?
Oh, I just bought one for my wife from Dell Outlet. Those are the ones that people get squeamish. They bring them back after 10 days, and then they have to resell them for a lot less.
So you like that Dell
Outlet? Good deal. All right.
Yeah. Thanks, Bob. All right, Dale from Santa Cruz, what's your question?
Yeah, I have a computer at work and a computer at home, and I'd like to... work on files and on both computers. So I got a memory stick, but I'm concerned about security. If I lost it, I am concerned about some of the files on there, and I'm wondering what kind of affordable security there is for memory sticks. So if you lose them, the data isn't just floating freely around.
The age-old question of security and storage. Well. So consider this. If you do actually buy some encryption software that'll do this for you,
yeah.
And you lose the key, then your data is completely worthless.
Right.
So keep that in mind. But you can get software out there that will do this for you.
What about the situation? I mean, a lot of the things you want with these portable drives is to move from machine to machine. And if you need to encrypt them, then on both machines you have to have the
key.
Unencryptor.
Exactly.
The key and such.
And the more you do this, the more likely it is that the key gets stolen and all your data gets everywhere, gets exactly available using that same key. So the question, I think, is really how do you protect that data in between machines?
Right.
And you can even...
Would you have to install this on both machines, or is there something that would be on the stick itself
that would
protect itself?
I'm looking right now. I was at lifehacker.com, which is a really great place when you want to find cool utilities that lots of people use and recommend.
Lifehacker?
Yeah, lifehacker.com. And there's a utility. It's a free utility that you install it on your USB fob, and it encrypts everything, and all you need is a password to access that.
Okay.
And it's a high level of encryption.
And the application actually sits on the
USB.
On the fob.
Yeah. So you just have to remember the code.
Do you know the name of that app?
I'm looking right now. Send an email to us. Go to the geekspeak.org.
Okay.
And send an email, and
Thanks so much for the call.
Thank you.
Well, Bob, I don't want to, and we're taking a lot of calls, not about the book, and I want to make sure that everybody understands we do have the author of Makers, Bob Parks, on, and... We did give away this copy of the book that I've got in front of me to Victor, a high school freshman in Salinas. Victor, thanks for being so fast on the dial. In a few minutes, I'm going to ask a question about our topic. I'm going to give away another book based off of something we've already said on the show. So keep your ears peered and keep the phone numbers ready. And the phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. I'm making Rick work for his volunteer duties today, that's for sure. We're gonna go ahead and go to... Yeah, Sean.
I found it. It's truecrypt.org.
Truecrypt.org if you want to make
source.
Your...
It's open source disk encryption software for Windows and Linux.
Great. All right. So Macintosh users wouldn't be able to use it, but that's a great package. Thank you very much for that. In Seaside, Bruce, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello.
I think you've called before.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
We didn't have time to get into it because it can be... It's more of a philosophical thing. But I have two boys. They're both teenagers. And as you know, teenagers are great to be with. They're a lot of fun. I see all their brains and all their energy. I'd sure like to get them involved with the family business, which is producing software. And they kind of dabble around it.
That's probably the last thing they want to do, huh?
That's what?
That's the last thing they want to do.
Well, God, it's an embarrassment that they're so good with some stuff. And, you know, they lost their Windows machine and they were given Linux in the hopes that it would slow them down. And, yeah, it did take them a while to get used to Linux, like 10 minutes. And they're back. They're the kind of guys that'll recompile drivers and stuff like that.
Bruce, what is your question for us? I want to do it philosophical, but we've got a lot of other calls calling. We've got a guest on. Is it about makers and what their personality traits are and how get a kid to kind of be a maker?
How do you get kids involved with programming, interested enough to do it?
Bob, tell us about the roots of some of these folks. Were there some common threads you were mentioning? They had a hard time the way the learning was approached in high school?
Yeah, I think that I wonder if there's a way that for these kids to experience risk and something that's edgy, but something that you're comfortable with. I don't know, obviously not hacking or cracking into the Pentagon, but Linux is exciting as software. A lot of these makers found ways that they could do something that, you know, was a little bit dangerous, but, perfectly exciting as a scientific pursuit.
Maybe you could have them write software that actually interacts with something real. Maybe that's something that would make it more compelling, more interesting for them.
Microcontrollers.
That kind of thing.
Like the cat door.
Yeah.
Because that's what really you get a lot of, you get a lot of power from that you're actually affecting something else.
Bruce, thank you very much for the call.
Okay. Well, thanks for your opinions.
All right, so let me go on. Let's do one more of these stories. They're really wonderful. Sarah Mims has been doing stuff with kites. Can you tell us about what Sarah Mims does?
Yeah, she created a amazing science fair project that really went above and beyond the high school competition that she was in. It's a kite that harvests little air samples way up in the sky. And she's in the Gulf of Mexico taking these air samples. And once she looked at them, she had a suspicion that when people burn fires in South America, that fungal spores get carried to the Gulf of Mexico. So after she got her kite home, she looked at the air samples, and sure enough, there were fungal spores and pieces of soot. And so she was able to present that, and it really showed that to a lot of people that these spores travel a long way.
Very cool. Now, was this kind of her theory is that those spores are actually being propelled by the gases of the fires?
Exactly. That the traditional wisdom is that the spores are all biological activity is killed by any fire, and her thesis is that when you do mass biological burning in South America of forests and brush, that the spores are actually protected by the soot and propelled further.
Okay, I want to ask one more of you. Richard Hull is doing stuff with fusion. Can you talk to me about that?
That's incredible. I mean, there's only a dozen people in the world doing this on a private level. And, it reminds me so much of the nuclear Boy Scout, the guy who did fission in his backyard. Fusion is a lot less dangerous. You're combining two hydrogen atoms to make a helium atom, but it's awfully difficult. He's got a giant dome that looks like an IKEA salad bowl, but it's about an inch thick. And inside that dome, he's filled it with hydrogen. And he hits it with 30 to 50,000 volts, and it excites those atoms so much that they combine and throw off a little nuclear energy.
So it's working. It's not It's not supporting itself in the fusion.
That's the dream of that whole community that he's in.
But he's doing it in his own garage. Amazing. All right, the next copy of the book that's going out, our last copy, unfortunately, so I'm not going to have one of these in front of me, is going out right now. And the question is, the first person that answers this question, and the phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Anybody, open to anybody that's listening. The question is, Who is finding out all about atmospheric analyzation using kites, and specifically fungal molds in the upper stratosphere propelled by fires? What's the woman's name?
You want the woman's name?
I want the woman's name. Hey, I said it twice. Phone number 476-2800, toll free at 1-800-655-5877. This is someone that's going to be able to really get this book, you know, really dig it.
We could give them a little hint.
Okay.
The real geeks out there, that her dad actually writes the electronics books for Radio Shack.
Hey, good tip. I like that. All right, we're going to take one. No way. Yeah, we're going to take one more call quickly. No, actually, you know, Michael, we're just not going to be able to get to you today. I'm so sorry. Norton Works 2006 crashing in Microsoft XP. Clean install. I'm saying I think that's the best way I can answer that question. So sorry, I'm not going to take that call. You're welcome to keep calling with that, with the answer to that problem. I don't think Rick has gotten the answer, and that is the artist / scientist who's doing atmospheric radiation or atmospheric testing using kites, and her father is the author of the electronics books for Radio Shack. And, oh, yes, Rick, that is the correct answer. It's Sarah Mims. The caller got Sarah Mims, and that's the woman's name. So stop calling on that. And the book is Makers, All Kinds of People Making Amazing Things in Garages, Basements, and Backyards. Bob Parks is the author. He joined us. And the book's by O'Reilly. There's also a magazine called Makers, which has a lot of similarities to this book.
Or Make.
Or Make. Thank you very much. The book is Makers. The magazine's Make. And the
website's makemagazine.com or makezine. That's it, makezine.com.
Right. And the author, of course, is Bob Parks. Bob, thank you very much for joining us today on Geek Speak.
That was awesome. Thanks a lot, guys.
Bye-bye. All right, Geek Speak is proudly sponsored by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Felton, offering color printing, design, computer rentals, delivered office supplies, shipping via FedEx, UPS, DHL, and more. Details at businesswithpleasure.com. You're listening to Geek Speak. Our phone answer and fellow web geek, Rick Filmon, was there all day today helping with the calls. And, of course, the geeks today, Sean and Drew. This program is supported by a grant from Cruise.io, providing local and nationwide internet services, including DSL 6.0, spam filters, and virus protection. Information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. Drew Meyer, Sean Cleveland, Rick Filmon, thank you very much for participating in Geek Speak today.
Thank you, Lyle.
Thank you, Lyle. Our pleasure. If you have a question that didn't get answered, send us an email to...
Go to geekspeak.org and use our web form to send us email. Thank you all for participating. And those that called in and just listening, thank you for making GeekSpeak what it is. Without you, it would just be us geeking out. And who wants to listen to that? GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence, and he's used by permission. Next week on our program, the digital revolution may be creating a global village, but we all still live on Earth. And Earth is still fairly large. Fortunately, web-based mapping technology is getting better every day. Authors Rick Gibson and Skylar Earle join the geeks for a discussion of online mapping, specifically their new book, Google Maps Hacks from O'Reilly. Learn all about online maps and on GeekSpeak Saturday mornings at 10 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio, Santa Cruz, KDBH, San Ardo, or on the web at KUSP.org. For KUSP and GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxell. Coming up next is Castle Cottage with Susan Freeman, but first, the Slo County Report.